Hello, extra time.
Very important to the league not to get a hold because it damages your reputation. It makes people, when they read it, just laugh at you.
The single club, they're playing in the League One and they're playing in the Europa League and they're credit.
Welcome back to the ExtraTime.ie Sportscast. I warned you I'd have some Treaty United shows coming up pretty soon. I'm glad to say we do today. Dave Rooney of Treaty United is going to join us to talk about his side being the flagship team going out and representing Limerick in the WNL. Some 5 months after we did our WNL preview, I could get out today, which is, I'm glad that wasn't a total waste of time for anybody. At least, though, we get to talk about it today, although not in the happiest of circumstances, Treaty well beaten for their first game, but I'll get into that with Dave in just a little bit. Right now, I'm joined by Mac Darfaris and Andrew Dempsey. And lads, we're going to get on to some of the Premier and First Division action after the interview with Dave, but we have to talk a bit about the European draw and more sort of pressing news. Up north, Linfield's Champions League preliminary round game against Kosovan side FC Drita has, I was going to say be postponed, but it's more or less been called off. Friend of the show, Mark McIntosh, I saw him reporting on Twitter there that it's likely that Drita will forfeit the game and Blues will be awarded a 3-0 victory. Final decision to be taken by UEFA control and disciplinary body tomorrow morning. So we'll see a little bit more on that. Essentially, it's down to a second player testing positive for COVID in that team. So it looks unlikely they'll be able to play. We've talked a fair bit about this. What I'd like to do here is I'd like to ask you, I suppose, a two-part question. Is it just the big leagues like in England that they'll be able to have this go off without a hitch and because you know they're relatively moneyed and they're working in a bubble? And is that fair? Should the likes of Drita be punished and eliminated from competitions because of this?
Well, I think they were the rules, Declan, that you could move matches within, like we've seen Dundalk's game being moved away because the country they were playing wasn't on the green list. So, but up until I think 48 hours before the game, they can kind of do stuff. But if close to then, if something happens within the host club, I think that was the case. So yeah, I think the expectation is that Linfield will get a walkover.
It's difficult to stomach though. Like if that was the other way around.
Yeah, it is. The only thing is that the games need to be played and you can't really, you know, you can't really drag it on after. There's quite a wide gap actually between this second qualifying round. So the first qualifying round, so the second qualifying round, which the League of Ireland clubs are in, you know, with matches are on the 27th. The next round isn't until the 17th of September. So it really just depends on what's happening with the virus and what the kind of host governments are deciding about travel arrangements. But yeah, it is a bit of a concern. I'm trying to put it at the back of my mind. You want to see these four League of Ireland clubs have these matches and try and go through. And, you know, this week we've seen Europa League happening in Germany in a bubble and Champions League is happening in Portugal in a bubble. And, you know, that's the best way of doing things, trying to travel. Like the idea of, you know, getting flights to certain venues, you know, around Europe when the coronavirus is still, you know, pretty rampant in some countries. Like the one thing is that UEFA are putting money up if matches need to be moved to neutral venues. And the other thing that normally happens is when the European draws and matches are happening normally in July, it's really, really expensive to charter a flight. I'd imagine that probably the price of a charter flight has gone down considerably simply because there's so many planes sitting on tarmacs around Europe. But the disappointment is for League of Ireland clubs that three of the four teams are having to travel away, you know, and only one is at home. And you know, while the money's there and it's not going to be as expensive, it's a one-off game. Obviously, you'd much prefer to be playing at home, giving yourself a best advantage trying to get through to the next round.
I don't really see, though, if this is going to keep popping up, how this is going to be feasible for, as you said, I know it's early days. I'm not going to start talking about you know, if this keeps coming back. But if you look at Scotland at the moment, they've had outbreaks because people have been careless there. We had an incident in Waterford. Obviously, it's turned out to be negative, and thankfully that's good news. But you can see that there is an increase in these cases in the leagues or around the continent. Like essentially, it is down to finances. It is down to being unable to.
Well, not in the case of Scotland. Like Aberdeen players went out. You know, went out on a Saturday night to the bar where the, you know, and then
surprised. I mean, Liverpool when they won the league were all to get her in a hotel when they claimed they
should. Yeah, that's all fine. But the Aberdeen players, I think, went out to a normal bar, and there was a number of cases. Like, the Celtic player travelled, by all accounts, without his clubs knowing to another country. So, like...
That was for a one day. What's the point at that point?
Well, the rules are the rules. And I think that's all you can do at this stage is you know what countries are on the green list. You know, they're putting the arrangements in place and teams need to follow them. And if they don't, you know, we don't necessarily know what's happened with the opposition for Linfield. You know, these things can just happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just... The guidelines are there and clubs need to stick with them.
Yeah, concerning nonetheless, like...
Absolutely. Yeah.
I am concerned what level this is going to keep happening. I know this is early days and we're able to talk about it a little bit like it's relevant to the league here, but it is a larger problem across the European football. And you know, you do fear like we're just going to hit a wall at some point, just won't be able to continue it. And teams are just going to have to take buys and be knocked down and all that kind of stuff. But look, we'll wait and see as it develops. As I said, that news will be breaking tomorrow and confirmed tomorrow. So we'll wait to see what comes from that. We'll talk a little bit about the European draws then. I don't want McDara's take on this just yet because I feel like it'll be a little bit tinted. But I think Shamrock Rovers have a handy draw when looking at everybody else as they take on Finnish side Ilves Tampere, I think it is. What do you think, Andrew?
Well, compared to the side that Bo's got, I think Rovers have got quite fortunate. Even the size that they could have drawn, they weren't exactly world beater. So yeah, no, look, it's a good draw for them. I think obviously if they go through, it will be worth a few bit. And look, if they get knocked out, you'd be very, very disappointed, I think.
I do think they have a really good chance, made all the more by the fact that it'll be in Ireland because they're on the Greenlands as well. So I really do think they're superior side judging from these two sides. I mean, the Finnish sides in general wouldn't have a huge amount of European pedigree. Certainly these guys don't. I'm trying to think back to any Finnish sides that you would have seen. Haka, maybe?
Helsinki, probably.
Yeah,
Helsinki, I'd say.
I'm full of Finnish football stories.
Oh, are you? Well, come on over and tell us. Just don't tell us how difficult Shamrock Rovers have it here and why. I just want to hear.
No, there's a friend of mine who spends a bit of time in Finland, so I'm just going to rob their tweet about Tampere, also known as the Bobcats. So they had a good season last year. They did win the cup, so it's two cup winners going head to head, but they've scored six goals in the last six games, one win in the last seven. So the other thing, just from a Finnish point of view, Rovers played Raps Rovaniemi back when Pat Fennin was manager. They lost first leg 2-0, so back in 2016, I think it was. And Fennin then left and Stephen Bradley took over as caretaker manager in the way like they drew 1-1 against Finnish side. So yeah, it was definitely probably the best draw they could have got. And then just getting it home, just for the myriad of reasons I mentioned earlier on, just makes a big difference. You know, yeah, it would be very disappointing if they didn't get through on this.
The important thing to say, I think, over everything is, have you seen their crest or their little badge? Which is it's like a knockoff of the Partick Thistle one done by David Shrigley, the artist.
Yeah,
the little angry sun man.
Yeah, so I think it was Pogue McGull retweeted somebody saying it's great that they let the chairperson's son have a go at doing the mascot or doing the crest. So yeah.
Elsewhere, Dundalk, interestingly, are going to be playing Slovenian side NK Kelje in Hungary. As you mentioned earlier, McDara, UEFA are going to be providing a travel grant for that, for Dundalk getting to Hungary. I didn't notice that earlier. Well, I didn't actually realise that was part of the rule. So that'll be interesting. Dundalk wouldn't need that as much as some of the other clubs, I feel.
I don't think they're going to return it to UEFA and go, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, I'm sure they'll gladly accept it.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be as confident for them now. This looks actually a very tough draw, I think.
Yeah, it's not an easy draw. And that, like, Dundalk were seeded and the opposition aren't seeded, but simply just because Slovenia don't have a very good kind of record on that. So, like in recent years. So, yeah, no, they are a good side. The good thing is if Dundalk can get through, they'll be home in the next round at least, so they won't have to travel away, and that would be to either.
I wouldn't be worrying about that if I was them. I'd be concentrating on the game in front of them because I think that...
Certainly, you could be a League of Ireland manager with that kind of attitude. You're just looking at the next game. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Are Slovenia ahead? They are ahead of us in the coefficient, aren't they?
Slovenia. Most countries.
I believe Slovenia are. Maybe Dundalk sort of... style will you know, their more rounded style might see them better suited to a game like this to defend and you know, I mean the issue they had against Bowes, according to Vinny Perth, was that they got caught in the counter-attack. So I imagine they'll be trying to do the counter-attack in this one. And you should see a little bit of the likes of Kolovic and Duffy's pedigree in this one as well, I would have thought. Let's talk then, just before we wrap up, Bowes' take on Fervar, previously known as Videoton. That one passed me by completely. I was thinking, who are Fervar? And then you look them up and you look about their past, and should have only in Europa League group stages with Chelsea. Was it last year or the year before? Last year, wasn't it? The Sarri year.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So again, looks a very, very tough one for them. That's away as well.
Their squad is stuck full of internationals as well. Yeah, no, tough draw.
Yeah. I'm going to talk in a bit more detail later about probably the depth that's in Bo's team that I didn't figure they had. So maybe I'm underselling them a bit here, but yeah, team with some serious pedigree there for them. And then Derry, they have to go to Lithuania to take on FK Rierilai. And I read a piece in the Derry Journal there today pointing out that Ali Gilchrist would have faced them previously with St Johnston when they were knocked out 3-1. I thought, interestingly, he mentioned in that the Scottish side were sort of looking at them as a bye, sort of looking at the next round. I'm amazed that St Johnston thinks like that, that any Scottish side thinks like that. I don't think there's not much recent European pedigree in Scotland like for any of them to be thinking that way. More often than not, they're out in the... I mean, you wouldn't catch any of the Irish sides thinking that way now, at least, would you?
No.
So I was amazed that and I'm not saying he did now himself, but he did say that, all right. So pretty interesting one. But again, Derry have it pretty tough there, playing in Lithuania. That side has got their first league win in the bag. I think they've got a cup final coming up. And to me, Derry look like, in recent years, anytime you kind of had a little bit of hope for them in Europe, they've gotten tonked. I think probably Shamrock Rovers through and the rest are all going to struggle. Dundalk's going to go to penalties again or something.
Well, the thing about Dundalk is throughout their squad, they've got experience of playing in Europe. Like, the difficulty for Bohemians is that they don't have, you know, they haven't been involved in Europe. And so just having that experience, and suddenly it's just kind of this one-off tie. You don't have, you know, your home leg in front of a packed Tenement Park, and that's really going to make a difference. But, you know, Dundalk have that pedigree in Europe. Now, they've other players that they brought in new to the squad for this year, but you know, they kind of I'd like to think they'd probably still be able to get through, even though it is a tough draw.
You're giving Shamrock Rovers a chance and the other three, yes or no?
Yeah, I think Rovers and Dundalk, just that experience from within the Dundalk side to get through. I just think that was the quality of opposition. I think they're particularly unlucky with who they've got. Like, the record for League of Ireland sides away from home is really tough. It is a neutral venue away from home, so you can't just look at the previous records and go, that's what the away records were.
Probably Rovers is a cert, I think. Dundalk, probably not, but they probably can, if you get me. And then the other two, probably not.
And of course, it's worth saying that Dundalk are in the Champions League, and even if they do lose, they drop into the Europa League, whereas it's one shot only for the teams that are already in the Europa League.
We're going to talk to Dave Rooney of Treaty United next, and then we'll jump into a couple of games.
And there's kind of a lot of grumbling about maybe we don't have enough Premier League players, but in terms of the Championship as a...
But what's the point in grumbling about it?
But the step
I can't argue about it, can I? If they're not playing the play, what's the point of me grumbling?
But the step up to international football from the Championship, is it kind of, is it easily managed?
Well, I'll tell you about when we played in 2002. What's the point of grumbling? We had lads who were all at the bottom of the Premier League. Real scrapping away, Kintz and Matty Holland and Gary Breen, who hadn't even got a club. What's the point of grumbling? So, I don't subscribe to that, you know, you just... Whatever it is, whatever I've got, I'll get them together and make the best of them and try and make sure we qualify. Grumbling is not one of the things I do.
You can subscribe to each new episode of the ExtraTime.ie Sportscast on iTunes. Please give a rating or add a comment there to let us know your views.
Dave Rooney, manager of Treaty United, joins me now. Dave, it's a pleasure to have you on. I checked back on our list of shows today that we've done sort of before the lockdown. It's been about 5 months since we did our WNL preview on the podcast, which just seems absolutely nuts to me. I imagine for yourself, you guys have probably felt every minute of it, considering, I mean, the work that would have gone in on your side even before that point.
Yeah, it's been a crazy few months. Obviously, the stuff that went on prior to the start of the season was well documented. The original start of the season was well documented. You know, the changeover from the previous club to then Limerick United, and then the legal stuff that went, the ramifications that went around that. pre-season was a nightmare. I've been on record there saying that we had to start the season in March. We were in big trouble. We were all over the place. We didn't train for most of the month of February due to problems with the name and insurances and things like that. And we were hemorrhaging players and things like that. So we were in big trouble. But the break actually came for us at a good time. It allowed us to get all the stuff off the pitch sorted out. And, you know, we're in good shape at the moment. We had a tough game the weekend. Back training last night and absolutely buzzing at training, you know. So the girls have taken a lot of positives out of the game. So, look, we just want to kick on. We just want to kick on and get going with football. We're delighted to be playing football. So, please God, you know, everybody can... You know, in and out of football and outside football can be sensible and we can keep going with the season, you know.
It's interesting from that point of view. I didn't really consider it because I was thinking more along the lines of, along with the pandemic, all that kind of pre-season stuff must have given you guys an extra level of sort of struggle early on. But I suppose, yeah, it would have given you a bit of time to sort things out. I imagine the atmosphere has improved tenfold then because I would have thought there'd be a bit of a toxic atmosphere towards the end of last season when all this noise started up.
Look, towards the end of last year, we were grand. We knew there was going to be changeover in players. We were a very, very young squad, you know, so we're bringing all these young players through. We took the decision early part of last year to invest the time in the youth and invest, you know, to invest in the youth. I think we're doing well with a few of the older players that were with us last year. Probably older is the wrong word, probably more experienced players. They wanted, you know, immediate gains last year, but we you know, it was always our vision to bring through these young players. So, you know, we knew we were going to be young this year. We also needed to keep a few of the more experienced players as well to balance the ship. But we were in, as I said, we were in a bad shape. The break kind of worked out well because we just shut down. Once the shutdown came, we actually shut down. We didn't do anything. We let the players off. And when we come back then in June, it was a fresh start. It was completely a fresh start. So we got a good 6-week pre-season into them and it was a completely different start. You know, new name, new colours, new crest, new everything. And everything about us this year is new. So that was the mindset we took when we started back in June. It was totally new and forget about everything that's gone on in the past. And it's worked. It's worked. A lot of the players there have really bought into it. The younger players really feel part of something special now, you know. So, look, you know, hopefully, you know, start showing the results on the pitch in the next few weeks.
It's probably a strange position, or a bit unusual, I suppose, to be in the sense, as you said, a sort of clean slate, but in a way you're a flagship for like a whole new team coming through for the next while. I think you said flagship yourself, actually, so I'm probably robbing that quote directly off you, but it's probably an unusual position for a lot of the players to be in that sense as well, that, like, I mean, you're the start of what's to come for hopefully the future of either junior or senior soccer in Limerick.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Like, I mean, when I remember the press conference, the original press conference, and it was on RTÉ News, and it was Limerick United, and Conn was up, and, you know, we're not going to have senior soccer, I think was the name, was what was said at the meet. We're not going to have senior football here, but we will have it back by next year, you know, and I took great offence to that at the time, you know, to say, look, we are senior football, and you need to recognise us as your flagship team. So, in fairness to the board, 3D United board, you know, and that's where it's come from. You know, they do recognise us as their flagship team. We're setting the standards, praise God, for the rest of the club coming through. Praise God, there's going to be boys' academies and the senior team there, if not next year, within the next, you know, definitely be a boys' academy, and hopefully the senior team will follow. The plan is for next year, you know. So, but we're looking to set the standards and set the template, everything around the club, everything off the pitch. Sponsorship packages, things like that, player sponsorship packages, kit deals and all that is being done with the whole club in mind, but the girls are kind of leading the way on it there, you know. So it is, yeah, it's a little bit of extra pressure on us that way. Obviously all the spotlight is on us, and when you're losing your first game 5-0, you know, but you know, that's the way it is. Look, we take that as it comes, and you know, the girls are working hard. I can't fault any of them for the effort they're putting in and the time they're putting into it. They're giving sort of some serious time. As you know, they're all volunteers. You know, they're all amateur players. Nobody's getting paid to play. So they're giving up some serious time and they're happy to do it. They're happy to do it. In fairness to the club, they're recognising them and they're recognising the time they're putting in. So, yeah, we are the flagship team in Limerick, and hopefully we can get people on side as well.
You mentioned the 5-0 defeat. I suppose we better touch on the football, not just the off-the-field stuff as well. Probably not an ideal game to start on, given Pima chun at the bit, full of internationals as well. And looking at reports and watching the highlights back, it didn't necessarily look a 5-0 loss. It might have just been, by the looks of it, that Pima's experience probably showed a bit. They scored some pretty serious goals as well.
Yeah, look, Pima's a class. Pima's are top side. Like, there's no weakness in the team, like. And they're not just top from 1 to 11, they're top from, you know, 1 to 25, you know what I mean? Like, there's players in females, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, that would walk into most other teams in the league, that's a different matter as to, you know, are they helping out with the strength of the league? But Piedmont have to do what Piedmont do. They're looking after themselves and they're looking at the Champions League campaign this year. So, but they're a top side. There's no weaknesses in the tournament. Look, they took the game very, very seriously. I said before, if we were going to, you know, catch them on the hop, the first game of the season is probably the time to do it. But there was no, like, I mean, they were right at it from the start. And, yeah, you know, like James made a comment before the match that it was a cup final, and I kind of laughed it off and says, yeah, but no, it was. You could see the girls were right up for it. Like, they were, you know, they were really, really at it from the first minute. So, look, they're a top side. We stuck in well. I said it to the girls, you know, if you can see it early, just stick in the game and stay in for as long as you can. And we were well in the game for 60 minutes, like just 5 minutes before halftime, created a chance, couple of corners there just before halftime. We actually didn't want the halftime whistle. We were well in the game, and then we came out with the first 10, 15 minutes second half and kind of had a good rattle off them. But we conceded a sloppy tour goal, and that kind of deflated us, and that was the end of the game. From then on, we were kind of hanging on a bit now. Look, it was 5-0. As I said, we have a couple of games coming up now where we're looking to kick on. We have a 10-day break now to the Cork game, and we're looking to kick on with that one. And first home game in the Markets Fields for Treaty United. And please God, we can get something out of that game, start building a bit of momentum and take it into the DLR game then after that.
Mm. Just on the rest of the squad, I mean, you've carried over a few from the Limerick FC squad the previous year. You've lost a couple of players, like Sylvia G. I even saw Carys Johnson sign up for Cork as well. Would have grabbed a few goals for you in recent seasons. So you've had to do a bit of recruitment. You've managed to hold on to Marie Curtin as well. But obviously, you talked about a lot of the young players coming through. Eva Horgan's a good example of that. Someone who would have been with the Ireland under-17s and the European League, yeah, even going well enough last year. With so much going on, I suppose, on and off the field, and with the pandemic, has it been hard to get the recruitment right and keep the team intact as well? As earlier, you were hemorrhaging players. Like,
yeah, it was really hard. Like, we lost Aveen Clancy. I was good at over that one. Aveen was a smashing player. She went to Wexford. You know, I was looking to really build the midfield around Aveen this year, but there was too much uncertainty around the club. I know her mum and dad well. She's a winner. She's a born winner, and I get why she wanted to go. You know, she couldn't take the chance on another, you know, mess of a season. So she went. We were very lucky to hold on to Aoife. Aoife was 50-50 at the time, especially with all the messing going on. But, I got on well with Mary. She's Aoife's mum. And I think Rebecca coming back also had a big part to play with it, you know what I mean? So it's more than that. The two shines, more than a shine. I think they're two fantastic players. I think they've been overlooked for international squads in the last few years. Please God, we can get them into the picture. They'll play plenty of games for us this year. You know, but there's a lot of young players there. But look, we knew early we were going to lose Sylvia. Sylvia kind of made her mind up early enough that she wasn't going to come back. And so that's why I needed to get a couple of girls in, a couple of experienced girls. Maggie became available fairly early from Cork as well. So I knew Maggie from being around the league as well. So we got Maggie, and through Maggie, we kind of picked up on Tara then as well. And we were hoping to get one or two more from that area as well. They went elsewhere instead, you know what I mean? But, you know, they've been a massive, you know, fuel for us to get them in. Just level heads and in around training. You know, I don't think Tara's missed a training session yet this year. You know, she's a great girl around the place. Her confidence was very low when she came in, but we're starting to build it up gradually, and she's, you know, we're starting to see it now. You know, she's going to be well up for the Cork game next week, you know. So there's plenty more other than Aoife and the two shines. You know, Cara Griffin had a good little patch there towards July and August there last year. Clodagh Doherty's a fine player. Alana Mitchell has been up with the under-19s as well, you know what I mean. So, you know, really, really, some really, really good young players. And then when you look down below them, you know, Jenna Slattery would have come on second half. She's an under-16 and 17 international. Ellen Casey started the game. Aoife Sullivan started the game as well. They're all under-17s. Yeah. And then, you know, really, really good squad of under-17s. So that's the way we're going to go. It'll take 2 or 3 years to bring all these players through. But once we get them through, we're going to be fine. So, and they're all Limerick girls, Limerick and Clare, Midwest girls. So, you know, if we look after them right, I don't see any reason for them to go anywhere else, and that's what we're looking to do, and build a real, you know, team of Midwest players, and see if we can kick on them.
It's a proper time for a project like this as well, in the sense that the league looks to have gotten a bit of a shake up. For those who probably don't follow the league all that much, there's a sort of new structure to it now. In the first phase, you're all going to play each other once, and then in the second phase, it'll sort of split off into two groups. I suppose traditionally people like to stick with the league format, but I think
it's funny because we would have put in a proposal at the end of last season as Limerick FC, we would put a proposal into the league, because the league was very lopsided. There was a top four and there was a bottom four. And this was before Athlone and Bowes were coming in. This was when Kilkenny were still in the side. So we would have actually put a proposal into the league to split the league, to go, you know, everybody play one or two rounds of games and then split it, because we found it really, really hard for the third round of games. Girls were going back to college. We were, you know, bottom end of the table, and it was really hard to motivate them and get them going. So we just felt that if there was a kind of a bottom section or a shield section, whatever you wanted to call it, that it might keep girls in the league a little bit longer. But it was shot down. It was shot down by all the clubs. So, you know, they, you know, all the clubs wanted to keep the remaining structure. So then when this COVID came around, and then they said, we're going to go with this structure, it was funny the way it worked out. But look, it's there's plus and minuses for it. You know what I mean? Obviously, it has to be done for, to get all the games in and to get some sort of integrity to the league. It has to be done. I think it's a good way of doing it. I think everybody plays each other once, and then they'll split top five, bottom four. But what it does give us now is something tangible. Like, you know, the start of the last couple of seasons, we were looking at the table saying, like, you know, we're not going to win the league. What's there for us? You know, FAI Cup and the League Cup. The League Cup is taken away this year. There's not enough time to get it in. So it gives us something tangible to aim for. Can we get into that top five? And I think that is achievable. I think, you know, the top three, and I throw Galway in there and make it a top four. I think Galway are a very good side as well. But, you know, after that, I think we're all competitive with each other. And I think it'll be interesting to see who makes that top five. And that's our aim for the year. That's the target we've set the girls. I think there's going to be a few upsets this year. I think the way the league is, I think there's pressure on the top teams as well. You can't afford to slip, you know, with it basically, you're looking at a 12-game division or 12-game league. You can't afford to slip. Like, Piedmont couldn't afford to slip last weekend. Right. Shells, like, Piedmont are going to Cork next weekend. That's a tricky one for them. Shells, you know, all of these games are going to be tricky, and all it takes is one of these top teams to slip. So I think it's, you know, it's going to make it interesting from that point of view as well.
You mentioned Cork a few minutes ago there, just, I suppose, that's the next game up, as you said. A bit of a break until that. But they'd have put up the Shells pretty well. You've got a big sort of Munster derby now coming into the Markets Field with yourselves. How do you fare ahead of that game?
Yeah, we're okay. Look, before the Peas, I didn't make a big issue out of it. Before the Peas game, we lost four players. We lost two on the Thursday night before the game. Like, three of them definitely would have started the game. You know, Alana Mitchell definitely would have started the game. Lauren Keane probably definitely would have started the game as well. You know, so we lost three players. Claudia Doherty definitely would have started the game. So we lost four players just before the game. Alana definitely won't make it back. Lauren's 50-50. Claudia will definitely be back. She trained last night, so she'll be back. So we'll be stronger than we were against Piedmont. Anna Shoin is fully fit now. She'll definitely be back for the Cork game. So we're in good shape going into Cork. I was up in Talca Park. I went to the game before Piedmont. I went up to watch the Cork and Shells game. Shells are good side. Shells are very, very good. They knock it around. If you stand off them at all, they just pass you to death, you know, so they're a good side. But Cork, in fairness, have a lot of young players there, some smashing young players, and you know, a bit of experience in midfield as well. Becky Gasson's coming in this year. She'll give them a bit of steel in midfield. But you have Ava O'Mahony, who's, you know, senior international. Zara Foley, who I would have worked with all the way up through schools as well, smashing player. Maria in goal, you know, really good goalkeeper. So, you know, Cork are similar enough to ourselves, a few young players, but a few senior pros in there. And of course, Saoirse Nunan on her day is unplayable. She's one of the best players in the league on her day, you know what I mean? So, you know, I think it was the second game of the season when we played 2 years ago, first game. We'd beaten Kilkenny, we went down to Cork, and Saoirse beat us on her own. It was 2-1, but she scored two crackers that day, you know, we were well in it. But, you know, so Cork are a good side, similar enough to ourselves, and it'd be a cracking game. Munster derby, all of that stuff. Evening game under lights, Markets Fields, kind of great buzz around it as well, you know what I mean? So, yeah, looking forward to that, really.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Dave, thanks so much for taking the time to chat us. One more request for you, I suppose. I know there's a few of us kind of waiting out there to get, and I can see you got the Treaty United gear on you at the moment. There's a few of us waiting for some sort of Treaty United gear that we can get our hands on. Can you have a word with the lads up top and let us know maybe when we can grab ourselves a jersey or some sort of Treaty swag?
Yeah, what you need, whatever you need, it's just banging on to be there. We get it up to you. Loads of spare jerseys at the moment. We went mad with the kid order at the start of the year. So Umbro are very good to us. Malcolm, he's a smashing lad in Umbro there. He's very good to us. Turned around the gear really, really quickly. So whatever you need, let us know. We'll get it up to you.
Brilliant stuff. Well, all the Treaty United fans listening heard that one, and they'll be on the club no end now on Twitter. Thanks a million, Dave.
Fair play to you. Thanks, pal.
Gareth Penrose isn't exactly Alexander Graham Bell, but the Dubliner did bring Irish football into the modern era with the establishment of extratime.ie.
Hello, Extra Time. Thanks for your support. You are the 12th man.
So in some ways, Penrose is a pioneer. website has evolved to include weighty opinion pieces, coverage of women's football, and a regular podcast.
Greg Bolger, as a player of some technical ability, but some is probably a bit disingenuous to yourself.
Just some! Thanks, guys, just some. Yeah.
Well, here's something back, Mr. Penrose. Thank you.
And I don't do it so they turn around and go, "Well, thank you, David. Thank you for the laughs." I do it so one day someone will go, "There goes David Brent. I must remember to thank him."
Plenty of places to jump in here, but we'll start right off with Dundalk dropping points and Rovers picking up more points, McDarry. A little smile creeping in there at this stage, getting a bit giddy. I mean, Twardek and Bowles were absolutely on fire for about 15 minutes.
He was unbelievable. So I watched the first half in Eddie Rockets in Donnybrook on my way to Belfield on Friday. I was treating myself and sending pictures to the Extra Time WhatsApp group, which didn't go down very well.
It was infectious because after that, I was like, "Ah, for fuck's sake, I've ordered Eddie Rockets immediately after that then."
So there are obviously other takeaway establishments if anyone wants to come in sponsors. But the benefit of Watch LOI that you could watch it on your phone. So yeah, I saw the first half and Tordek seemed to be doing really well. And they were well taken goals. So I didn't see the second half, but Bowes played very well. And yeah, just a lot of drop points for Dundalk, which... You know, they started slowly last season and Rovers had started really well and then dropped off as Dundalk just kicked into gear relatively quickly once the season got going. But of course, in an 18-game season, they don't have that that wriggle room, you know.
I think also, I just want to give a specific mention to the second goal, which I thought was magnificent. McGuinness, his kickouts were really, really good. And I'll kind of come on to him in a minute. But his kickout to Twardek went into space, some lovely footwork. And a deep cross, even though I don't think he intended it to go where it did. I think he was more going back post, but lovely cross for it to be then cushioned down to Buckley to slot in. I thought it was a really, really nice goal. I'm not really having Vinny Perth calling that sort of counter-attack necessarily, because, I mean, there is chances to clear that. I there's a few questions about Dundalk just before we praise Bowes a bit further here. I don't want to keep hammering them, but they don't look that impressive watching games. And while they controlled the rest of that game, or certainly the second half for a large... parts, they just don't really blow you away. Moving Kolovic obviously onto the right seemed to help, where him and Duffy are linking up beautifully again. So their goal, to be fair to them, was fantastic. But even you look at the defence at the moment, I've seen a few Dundalk fans wanting Gartland to come back in. I don't know about you guys, I thought Cleary had a bit of an iffy game against Pats at times. I was surprised maybe that they didn't look to make a change there, but I'm not saying that's the solution of it all, but it just seems strange. It's been a while since I've seen Gartland starting. Dundalk, maybe you could argue with a couple of games already, might want to think about changing one or two things around. But to be fair, Hooban did smash the crossbar as well. So they probably should have equalised.
Earlier today, I was actually listening to Vinny Perth. He was doing an interview with the in-house media at Dundalk. And I suppose he didn't give the vibe that he was too worried about their performances, if you get me. He was more concerned that they were ready for Europe in a couple of weeks' time. That was obviously, like, looking ahead to this week. Obviously, they're playing, I think, Waterford tonight in the Cup and the game ahead over the weekend. But what struck me was that he wasn't actually too bothered by the results. He was more worried about the performances going into Europe. So, look, maybe they are trying to prime themselves for Europe, which I think, look, it could be a very short-sighted move, but you know, maybe it could work out for his legacy at Dundalk, but I think it's quite short-sighted personally.
Yeah, it's a bit of a risk that if you and maybe they're not, maybe we're just picking up wrong, but it's a bit of a risk to do that. And again, look, as McDarrah pointed out, look, they have slowly started before, so we'll probably be eating these words in about a week or two when they're back to absolutely smashing everybody and rolling the league in again. But to me, I don't think Shamrock Rovers look quite like giving it up this time. I think everyone kind of had that feeling last year anyway, that the tide might be turning a little bit. And even if you look at that Derry game, they're having that little bit of luck that maybe Vinny could probably argue Dundalk aren't with the Hooban header. Mind you, Bowes probably had a couple of more great chances. Sorry, before I move on from Bowes, probably didn't give them enough credit for the depth they have in their squad. Like, even Talbot being out, McGuinness coming in, you still got Finnerty and Corcoran and Levingston and players like that on the bench, which, you know, Levingston and Finnerty and Talbot would have been pretty instrumental players for them last year. So I think for Bowes, that's important to know as well, because, like, with all these games coming kind of thick and fast, they will have options to bring in here. And they're looking quite good, I must say. But, yeah, maybe Dundalk can argue they're not having quite the same fortune with, you know, that Hooban header not going in, and you look at Shamrock Rovers game like that, there was, I thought, more than a hint of good fortune about it. I know you make your own luck a lot of the time, but the Horgan own goal and just one or two other elements like that, you know, to be fair, Alan Mann has some great saves at the end as well, but maybe just getting a little bit of rub of the green or in good form, so it's working out for them.
Well, I think the Derry City goal was quite fortuitous, because that was a cross that just snuck in right off the post, just going over the top of Roberto Lopez's head and just by Alan Mann.
Lopez probably should have dealt with that, didn't he?
Well, it just went over his head, so I think it didn't help Alan Manus that it looked like Lopez was maybe going to get to it, but, you know, Manus dived full length and it just crept in off the post. So I thought Derry were very lucky with that, and that was the only chance of note they created even in the first half, and they created very little in the second half until the very end. I think the difference on the day was being able to make five substitutions, which means that when teams are down, they can actually change things up. So I saw Stephen O'Donnell had done it with St. Pat's earlier on the season when the game was at, where he just made two switches at half time. And then, you know, if you did that in another season, you're kind of getting and saying, well, hopefully no one else picks up an injury, or there's no one sent off, or someone picks up a booking that really might need to take them off. So Bradley Gamble had brought two players on at half time, brought Neil Frugia on in place of Danny Lafferty. And I think that made quite a lot of difference, because Frugia brought quite a lot of attacking vigour on that left. And then he made two other substitutions about a quarter of an hour maybe to go, 20 minutes to go, and they were the two that linked up. So Rory Gaffney came on, Reese Marshall was involved, he was a sub as well, and Marshall passed to Gaffney, who crossed in for Dean Williams, who was really unlucky not to get his first goal for Rovers' first team. His header flicked off the post, and yeah, it was a comedy own goal, so there was the bit of luck I think you're talking about. Poor Colin Horgan, it came off the post, hit him in the face and back in, nothing he could do.
It's not only a stroke of good luck though, I don't want to kind of denigrate teams by saying lucky and unlucky. It's riding the crest of a wave with the 4 minutes where Shamrock Rovers managed to turn things around completely. They just have a bit of that about them, whether it's touch more momentum about them than Dundalk at the moment anyway, which might be like ideal for this short burst games.
Well, that's it, you've got to turn it around. Like if Rovers had lost that game 1-0, everything's gone. You know, Bowes has moved into second place in the table as well, and it's such a short season that if you can go on a run, it's not a 33-36 game season. But then the fortune, I think you were maybe talking about, Declan, was at the end of the game, Derry hit the crossbar, and somehow, Alan Manus went over his head, and he somehow managed to stay in his feet, which meant when Owen Toll came in with the header, that himself and Lopez were able to shuttle it out. And, you know, that's the home. When you come away losing a game, you know, you're losing 1-0 with whatever, 15 minutes to go, and turning it around, and then just the manner of even just eking out that win at the end. But they did what they need to do. They're 6 points clear of Bowes and 8 points clear of Dundalk. So with Pats on Sunday, and Pats were pretty poor in the cup.
Let's touch on that game. I mean, Pats played hard back to back there, and it really was. It felt very much a case of like one side shopping it in for another side shopping it in. Like, I don't think Harps had a shot, or they did have one shot, but none on target against Pats in Richmond. Georgie Kelly, I was going to say with an instant impact, because I keep forgetting about the Derry game where he didn't have an instant impact. But any script behind saying he could get a run here and go for top goal scorer? Or is that madness?
No, he could do. Like, I was there on Friday for the game at Richmond, and he was the player that I think Pats lacked last season. Like, fair enough, they just couldn't score a goal last season, and granted, they probably didn't create as many opportunities, but Pats didn't create much on Friday night against Finn Harps, I thought. And look, they scored two goals with two chances, but with Georgie Kelly being somewhat alert. And actually, after the game, it was quite funny, because Ollie Horgan was giving his team a dressing down on the middle of the Richmond Park pitch, and literally everything that I thought, Ollie Horgan was just saying to his team, and you could hear every single word he was saying. But when he said it to him in his post-match interview, he denied every single word of what he said. So look, I don't think Georgie is I would have seen a lot of him at UCD as well, so it wouldn't surprise me if he went on a a mad run and ended up top scorer in this league, especially with only, what, 18? How many games left? 12?
Yeah.
12 games? 12, 13 games left. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
You would have said, you would have watched, we won't talk too much about the Cup games because they're going on tonight as we're recording this, but Harps obviously got their revenge then in Ballybuffet. And it sounds like Pats just swapped that exact performance. They sound like they were absolutely abysmal. Bit of inconsistency under Stevie O'Donnell so far, do you think?
At times they've looked good when they played Dundalk, and at other times they've been poor. Yeah, I was watching it last night, like maybe a lot of people, Europa League on the television, watch LOI on the laptop. But as you were saying, Declan, just seeing comments from other Pats fans, they were pretty poor.
Mm. A team who've been a lot more down than up, actually. Shells, another loss. That was a pretty interesting game, actually. I didn't really think they were in it for, what was that, 94th minute goal, I think, from Denver's, or from Deegan, I should say. Denver's open the scoring. But what about Sligo? Completely turned it around since the break. We did say, you know, if any team was gonna go pretty well off the restart, it was going to be them. Am I right in saying Junior hasn't even...
No, he's not. No, and I think I actually said before this started that it was a huge risk, signing Junior, and now I've got egg on my face already, so before he's even kicked the ball for them. So.
Well, technically, yeah. You might be right, because the way they're going at the moment, they don't need him.
They're flying it.
Absolutely flying it. Couldn't believe it. What's going on with Shells? Why have they been so abysmal since coming back?
Look, I saw them when they played Waterford. I was at that game, and look, it was just, personally, I thought it was a terrible game. I don't think you could probably, like, there's just no flow to it whatsoever, and it probably suited Waterford given the fact that, look, they've got a new manager in, and, you know, they probably didn't have time to play as much as the team as they probably would have liked in the last few weeks. But obviously I saw bits of them against Sligo, and yeah, they were never really in it. I didn't think, bar the goal, well, look, the goal at the end was so late on, they never even looked like they were going to equalise. So, didn't actually think Shells were the best team in the First Division last year either. So,
we'll probably move on to the First Division there. Sorry about that, Waterford and Cork, but you played out a 0-0 and it looked poor. Points on the board for Cork, that's something. But that's all you're getting this week. Let's talk about the First Division then, Andrew. I'm afraid, as it was away for the most part, I saw minimal Premier and saw absolutely... Diddley squat First Division, but I did notice there was a couple of interesting results, particularly Cavan Teely dropping points for the first time this year, and notably Galway still not managing to get points on the board. It's not looking ideal for that project at the moment, but, and I think I said this last week for Galway, and I probably left Cavan Teely out a bit, fair few injuries for both.
Yeah, no, and look, I know obviously Cavan Teely be disappointed to get a draw down in Wexford, but it's not the worst result if you think about the injuries that they had going into the game. They were missing Marty Waters, they were missing Keith Dalton, they were missing Luke Lucas, they were missing Mick Kelly, their goalkeeper, they were missing Connor Keady right before kickoff. They were, like, I think they're absolutely decimated by injury at the moment. And look, Wexford aren't the worst side either. They've obviously, Brian O'Sullivan's brought in a few good players. Obviously, Connor Crowley, he's actually ex-Cavan Teely, didn't really get a chance there last season, but he's starting to show his worth at Wexford. Dan Tobin as well, I'm sure. A lot of people who would have watched the Premier Division last year would know him from his time at UCD. Look, it's not the worst result. And look, they actually could have nicked it at the end. I think Rob Dunn had a great chance and he somehow fired over. Don't know how he did it. But yeah, no, look, it's not the worst result for Cavan Teely. But I think Galway are in serious trouble if they can't get a result on Friday.
Big result for Drogheda as well. Kicked themselves a few points up. Particularly leaves that cut off from Bray at the moment, who looked to have been starting back quite well, actually, Bray. But solid win for Drogheda, and you expect them now, they're only, what, 3 points off Cabo? They'll be thereabouts all the game, won't they?
100%. And look, I suppose I was actually surprised that Bray beat Longford on the bank holiday Monday, because Bray, they weren't in a great shape before, and then obviously they drew against Cove on the first Friday back. So I was like, look, you'd have to fancy Longford, but they went down to Longford and won 2-0, and look, it's a great result for them. Gary Shaw scored twice, if I'm not mistaken. I don't really think Bray will be up there in terms of the title. And I think Drogheda, look, they've got a great squad. And look, I'm sure McDarrah would have seen them against Shamrock Rovers too. And when they came back from two goals down with 10 men, like, they have quality in that squad. And look, if they're not in that top two, top three this season, I'd be really surprised.
Speaking of McDarrah, what's happening with Shamrock Rovers too? Still without win, all the bangers are playing, all the older lads are getting down when they shouldn't be. and they've got no wins and two draws so far.
I didn't. Yeah, I was the only journalist working in the press box in Belfield on Friday night. So I can, UCD were well worth the win that night. Rovers 2 had no bangers on Friday night. I think when the Rovers first team are playing following the first division team, they're less likely to have bangers. When it's the other way around, you can get the likes of Liam Scales dropping in. So yeah, no bangers evolved. So from the games I've been at, that Rovers 2 team have been unlucky, but I didn't think they were unlucky against GCD on Friday night. I think Andy Myler's team were probably the better team on the day.
I think when everyone had the whole People's League or whatever it was called thing going on, I don't think anyone expected them to be pushing Athlone for bottom spot when that was the case. But maybe we should. Maybe there's an argument there that it was a little bit blown out of proportion. But look, that's in the past. We'll leave that there for now. We've got to go because we've got some FAI Cup games starting pretty soon. So thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to Dave Rooney for taking the call as well. And we'll speak to you next week.